Well, good evening.
Good evening.
People are still moseying in, collecting themselves from dinner, and that was a delicious dinner. Is there anyone here new today, just came in on the bus? All right. So we've all been here, we've all heard our welcomes, and that's good. I'm glad we're all here. Tonight is going to be about a very specific kind of prison ministry. The last 3 days we looked at issues surrounding prison ministry, things that we face when we work inside of prisons in the context of church, in the context of Christianity. We looked at responsibility and humility on the first day. We looked at retributive versus restorative justice on the second day. And on the third day, yesterday, we looked at violence. And no matter what prison we're in, those are issues that come up regardless. But tonight we're going to look at a very specific kind of prison ministry. And this is called a prison congregation. Now there's plenty of Christians who go in and lead Bible studies in prison. And plenty of people who do poetry groups. People who do anger management. There's some wonderful programming. But specifically, the prison congregation, or the model of prison ministry, seeks to build a member church of a denomination inside a prison, composing that church of all incarcerated individuals. My church is the Living Stones Prison Congregation. And it's not just my church or my gig, it belongs to the Southwestern Washington Synod. It is a member church of a larger part of the ELCA. Every once in a while, when I have new council members, I go on the ELCA website and I print out the Living Stones Prison Congregation description roster that shows, our average attendance, that shows that we don't have a vacation Bible school program, that shows we don't have a Sunday school program, but it shows a listing and it shows our address. And then I show the men how, through the internet, how that belongs to the Southwestern Washington Synod and how that belongs to the ELCA and what they're a part of. They're also considered part of another organization called Prison Congregations of America. Prison Congregations of America was started by Pastor Ed Nesselhoff, a Lutheran pastor from South Dakota. And he was also the mission developer of the very first prison congregation. And that was in Jessup, Maryland, at the state pen. And he started a two-point parish, one in the women's facility and one across the street, the men's facility. And this was then part of the American Lutheran Church, the ELCA being part of three bodies that joined. And when Ed started this church, he called it St. Dismas. St. Dismas is the name that is given to the repentant thief on the cross. You won't find the name Dismas in the Bible, but the early church, for whatever reason, gave the name Dismas to the repentant thief. And this, therefore, St. Dismas is the church in Maryland. When Ed first started it, there was a question of, how is this going to be funded? And he was told, you're just going to have to go out to churches and ask for money. So Ed did do that. He went out to churches, and people looked at him like, why would we fund a church in the prison? There's already chaplains. There's already volunteers who go in. What is different about this? And Ed knew what was different. He knew that the men did a lot of the leadership of worship. He knew that the men were working on a newsletter. He knew that they had council meetings. And Ed was able to go door to door on the tiers and talk to people about coming to St. Dismas worship service. So he was actually able to do door knocking while he was at Jessup, while he was in Maryland. As churches asked these questions, Ed invited the churches of the American Lutheran Church, the ELCA, and the Lutheran Church of America to come and worship with the guys and the gals. And that's when Ed started to see something magical. Started to see the miracle of the gospel. Guys in prison and gals in prison started to sit up more. They got excited because there was a group of people coming to worship with them. Many of the people in prison, the only visitors they may ever get
are the volunteers who come to worship with them. One guy in the Living Stone said after his grandmother died, the only elderly people he sees are from the churches that come to worship with him. You can go into the visiting room on a Saturday night, and as we pass, there's 60 tables, and they're not always full. So there's plenty of guys who are not getting a visit, don't have a visit, don't have that positive contact with the outside world. And so it made a big difference to the members of St. Dismas, whether the female congregation or the male congregation. But Ed also saw the churches start to pick up, start to get excited about coming to prison. And there's some interesting things, I think, about that. When we look at Matthew 25, verse 36, you visited me in prison, you did so unto me. And oftentimes, that's preached as, this is something we've got to do, because that's how we serve Christ. I feel sometimes we miss the point of grace that is being offered when we take that, we've got to do this, attitude to the text. Because in a sense, when we go into the prison, to visit those in prison in the name of Christ, we see the face of Christ. We are in the presence of God's grace, experiencing God's grace in a whole new way. I've sometimes have likened it. I'm a gardener, and I study about microclimates and microenvironments. And oftentimes when you have one environment, say the ocean meeting the mountains, as we find along the Hood Canal region of the state of Washington, where those two environments meet, along the edge is a biodiversity that cannot be duplicated in either environment. Because you have a crossover of some of the things that live in the one environment crossing over into the other environment and vice versa, and there are some microorganisms that can only live along that edge of mountain and ocean. We can say the same thing here in this area of the state, where we have the mountains starting to meet the high desert. And we talk about Jesus Christ being fully human and fully God. And that in Jesus Christ, broken humanity meets perfect divinity. Grace and peace meet with a kiss. And in the prison congregation, we have people from the outside who may never have been in a prison, may never have had anything to do with prison ministry. And they come to worship with guys who have had an entirely different life experience, perhaps, than they've had. But unity is found in the reading of God's word. It's found in the preaching. It's found in sharing prayer. It's found in the celebration of baptism when we have one. It's found in sharing of the Lord's Supper. And something happens when we gather around Christ. Just as those two ecosystems, where they meet along that edge, some things can only live there. When people from two different backgrounds come together in the name of Christ, there's some grace that can only happen in that place. When we go to the margins. I was once asked, why are we starting? Well, the question I got hit with the first pastor I spoke to in our synod, is the ELCA starting a church in a prison? And I said, that's our calling in Christ, to go to the edges. And there's many edges we can go to. Here we are going to the edge of prison, to the forgotten, to that place. There's many things about the Living Stones I can tell you. We can be as much of a church as possible in the state of Washington, but that's only under the Department of Corrections. I cannot have men go visit the sick. That's a no-no. I cannot have men knocking on doors inviting people to worship. I can't do that. But what the men can do is we can have a newsletter. And I have some copies of last summer's newsletter here. This is some of their poems, some of their testimonies. That's all written by the men, and it's put together on computer by one of our members, on a computer he's allowed to be on. And this newsletter goes out to the churches of our synod, as a way of communicating and putting the face of the living stones in front of people. The men have an offering service. They are allowed to go to their personal accounts and with their counselor sign money off of their own personal account onto the chapel fund. And then we are allowed to give that money to a nonprofit in Mason County. Now, we had to get that approved by the superintendent, and that's why it has to go to Mason County, which is a county just northwest of Olympia, Washington. In that way, the prison benefits because the superintendent wants us to be good neighbors to those in our neighboring county. So we've given to Habitat for Humanity. We were part of the Thrivent Builds program with three other Lutheran churches. We were invited to do the house blessing ceremony for the house. The superintendent came along on behalf of the men. But when it came time for the little, like, 4x6 plaque, and gosh knows, churches have so many 4x6 plaques. When Habitat for Humanity came to give Living Stones their 4x6 plaque, tears poured out of eyes. The men saw that the $300 they had collected from their 30-cent jobs had actually gone out to do something. Last year in 2008, we gave over $400 to the Mason County Homeless Shelter. This year in 2009, we've been approached and asked to give a new Habitat for Humanity house in the area. And we hope that the guys will be able to build the cabinets at the prison wood shop that would go to this house. So that's one of the things we're keeping our fingers crossed on. So there's various things we do. We have a praise band. The guys are really into contemporary music, contemporary Christian music. And as far as I'm concerned, we're a church of word and sacrament where the gospel is preached purely, the sacraments are administered rightly. So I make sure the gospel is preached purely, I make sure the sacraments are administered rightly, and the rest is theirs. They do the music. They have the band. It was funny once. They wanted to have a tambourine. And they asked this guy, you can do the tambourine. And he looks at this. He did not want to do it. And he looks at me and he goes, Lutherans don't use tambourines, do they? So we did get to do it. So in every way we are the church. And we remain connected to the churches on the outside. There's many things that they're starting to do now as a result of their experiences. It's been really good to watch small churches, struggling churches, put together a group of 6 to 10 people and come and worship with the guys. Because it's something they can actually physically do. When before, they just didn't know what they were for. They didn't know what their mission was. And now they had something that they could put their hands on. And it's been a very powerful experience for those pieces of our synod. I have a video. One of the major things that we did in our first year was produce a promotional video. This is a video of the Living Stones prison congregation. Now, the Living Stones was a name the men picked. Now, we had gone through a bunch of different names, and Living Stones at first was considered to be a lark, because like breaking rocks. But then as we started opening the Bible, we found at least two passages that spoke to Living Stones. There is in the Gospel of Luke, at the beginning of the Passion story, where the Pharisees tell Jesus to tell his disciples to be quiet, shut this rabble up. And Jesus said, even if they were quiet, the very stones would cry out for justice. And then in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 through 5, we have the Living Stones. Come to him, Jesus Christ, a living stone, though rejected by mortals, yet chosen and precious in God's sight. And like living stones, let yourselves be built into a spiritual house, to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For it stands in Scripture. See, I am laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone, chosen and precious. Whoever believes in him will not be put to shame. To you then who believe, he is precious. Many of the men can joke about being stones. being dense, being thick. They can laugh at themselves. But to be precious and to be built into a church in a place where it's difficult to be church, because the guys face ridicule when they come. They face, you know, the jeers and the, and just like, it's like on a playground sometimes. They have to face people who will just laugh at them. And that's their fellow incarcerated people. But when they come to chapel, they get to have a place of respect, a place of safety, and a place where they can be themselves and be in relationship with one another and God in a way they can't be anyplace else in the prison. This video was produced as much as possible by them. They and I came up with a system by which we could select people from who were incarcerated to be interviewed in the video. That would not look as though we had self-selected. They also gave me the churches and the names of people who had already come from outside churches to worship with them, who they liked. And they wanted those people interviewed. They came up with the questions for interviewing both groups. There are several places where we will see the worship service. We'll see the inside of the chapel. And one night we had to bring in camera equipment into the chapel to film a worship service. Now, it's a lot easier to get a guy to sign a release of information just for a single interview. One camera, one person. But we had to sign 60 men into worship that night. Had one of them not signed the sheet, the entire night would have been wasted because he would have been on that film and he hadn't signed. And it was at the end of the night when the officer who was in charge of the chapel went through the list of men who signed in and men who signed their release information. It all checked out. And it was all self-governed by the men. When this video was first shown to them, and it was the night after an assembly, it was the day of a church Senate assembly, and so I had not prepared a sermon, so we showed the video. Again, there were tears, and there was surprise. There were tears because this was something that was promised that finally came true. There was surprise because it was so professional, and they felt it told their story in such a professional. I mean, professional really meant something to them, that it wasn't just a rinky-dink job. It looked like someone really cared when they put this together. We're coming in the middle of the video. We've skipped my bishop's introduction, and we've skipped my introduction, because I've just given you one. If we may.
Well, I believe me not, that I never lived for God. And that's kind of what I did in and out of church, but never living for God. My family's always been religious, and I went to church a lot. But as I got older, I fell and tried to do things my own way. And this is where I wound up. God's been good to me, though, all my life. They saved me many times. And I know that's the right way to go. And so that's what I'm taking the opportunity here to do that.
When I was younger, my mom's and my sister had me go to church, but I didn't feel like I fit in. So I stopped coming to church with my mom. I've been incarcerated a couple times and I've got back in religion. But Rise in Faith has really brought me a long way. It makes my time a lot easier to know that I have brothers that I can count on to talk to. The brothers talk to me like I've never really fit in any group. And like the brothers have talked to me when the testimonies from other inmates about their mistakes and how they came along is helping me want to come closer to God and realize that I'm not a bad person, that I can grow and accept the Lord in my heart.
I was born and raised in a Pentecostal church by my mother, single mother. And it wasn't just a Sunday thing, it was an every night. I mean, you know, we went there every night until the age of 15. After that, she gave me the option to to go to church or not, and I decided not to go to church after that, but it's been quite a while since then. I haven't been to church until quite a year now.
Well, I didn't have a lot of expectation. I think it was more just the experience. I was anxious about the experience and being with a group inside of a prison to discover how they worshiped and what their attitude towards worship was. Fears, I think probably everyone's apprehensive about what they can expect from being in a congregation of inmates that have been incarcerated.
Of course, we were working out of the box because we've never done anything like this before, so it was kind of, we were excited about the possibility. We were curious about what actually went on in prison as far as the worship went, and maybe questioned what the men would most like to hear and most react to as far as the worship went.
Why would we want to go in and worship? Why not? Scripture tells us, you know, when somebody's incarcerated, when they are in prison, visit them, be there for them. You know, it's not like we're all family as long as you behave. You know, we're all family no matter how you behave. And so it's like casting out family members. These are our brothers and sisters in Christ. And by saying, we're going to exclude you because you happen to be in prison, it's not very grace-filled. And I don't think it shows God's grace and compassion.
When the people come in to share with us here in prison, you can just see their face change. First, they're a little apprehensive, and then they get comfortable when they see what our chapel program's about and just what it's offering. And then at the end, it's like they know us, and we're able to relate with each other, and it's a bonding, oneness type of experience.
It helps me. It shows me that I'm a part of the body of Christ. I feel like I belong to now, and that I'm finding my place, and God has a place for all of us. And that gives me hope, and I'm seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, and something to look to, something to keep a hold of.
It was very humbling to know that we were all included on the same level as we were offered the body.
What you aren't ready for is how it's going to change you and the way that the men will be ministering to me by accepting me by their music and by their ministry. I realized that it's not me coming to the prison to visit them, but I am equally a sinner alongside of them. And if anything, I'm grateful that they are welcoming a sinner like me to come and worship.
For them to come and worship with us is it shows these people who are in prison, the lepers, as I call them, they come here and they show these people that somebody cares. You know, they care by just leaving as they're walking through the door when they see the feel of peace that's in here. You know, it might be scary to come through the gate, but once you come through the door here, it's different. You know, you can feel it as soon as you walk in. It's a calm. And if somebody wanted to come in and worship with us, I'd more than encourage you, because not only are you going to get a taste of what it is for the people that are just starving for the word to come in here, be here every day, but you're going to see how much they appreciate somebody coming in and actually taking a moment to interact with them or praise with them.
The first time I came in here, there was a choir, and we finish service around 7:30, and we don't get out here until 8 o'clock. And they sat and talked to us and made me feel like the world hadn't given up on us. They gave me hope that when I get out, there's going to be people there that's going to accept me and not look down on me for things I've done in my past. I've been trying to change, and a couple of the volunteers actually gave me encouraging words about to go to the church when I get out if I can.
You will be welcomed
The men are very gracious to have people from the outside come worship with them. I think it gives them a sense that there's hope, that there's people out there that care about them. Maybe it gives them a feeling of graciousness on our part, that we care enough to drive to Shelton and be part of the worship service with them and the worship experience. I think that, as I was, a lot of people would be richly blessed from this experience and seeing that when you don't have as much freedom as we do to worship, and you're looking at your work watch sometimes wondering, you know, if you're going to get out on time in your own church service, you know, trying to get out of there at noon. And I think these men would worship for hours if they could. They're hungry for the Word. They appreciate the Word. They appreciate the experience of the worship service. And it's a time when they really feel, I feel peace and freedom. And I just really encourage any church to experience this relationship, not only with the men, but with the worship service and what they get from that and what we get from that by that experience.
The ministry of presence is what all of these churches that go bring to this community of faith. I think that what the spoken, the unspoken message is that you're not worthless, that we care about you, that you are part of our family, that we're connected through Christ, that there's hope for you, that there's the promise is still yours. I think all that comes through just by being there. I don't feel like I brought anything particularly huge personally, you know, as far as a talent or a gift or a skill. But I just really believe strongly in that ministry of presence. And when you step into a place, go out of your way to step into a place to worship with people, that message is, you're worth me making time to do this. You're worth spending time getting to know a little bit about you.
We are so thankful for the experience, for the opportunity to share what we know. We've learned a lot. We've learned that we can pray for them when we go to communion. They're included in our thoughts and prayers.
I've seen a lot of programs come and go here, but this one has been just a steady growth and a steady participation. And these are the kind of programs that are going to help inmates when they get out in the community to be able to take that step and stay out, because they know that somebody cares, that somebody's willing to listen. And I just, for that reason, I just encourage you to keep going and put people out there to stay involved, because it does make a difference.
I'd like to thank you and the volunteers, whoever comes in here, that comes in to pray with us. It's just, it's a great feeling to have somebody actually here for you, other than, you know, than what you have here. Everybody's got to look out for themselves, more or less, but to have somebody extend their hands to you, not in fear or just customary, but just because they actually want to interact with you, because they love you, because they have the love of Christ in them, and they want to reach out to you. You know, they come in and they give you one word that sticks to the mind of anybody, whether it's an inmate or one of the guards, you know. They planted a seed, and I see that. I get it a little bit every time I come here. I get a little bit. I take some with it. You know, I don't know what else to say. I enjoy it.
I just want to thank you guys for having the service and letting me be part of it.
Every now and then in the ministry, you get an opportunity to really do grace. And these are men that haven't always had a lot of grace. In fact, in prison, it's a lot of law, a lot of schedules, a lot of be here now, you've got 5 minutes here, dress this way. And unfortunately, the church sometimes fails to reach out and to welcome those that are vulnerable or those perceived as the bad guy in society. And I had one such very powerful experience immediately before worship, sharing with a gentleman sitting by him and talking about our congregation, talking about my ministry. And he asked me, he said, "Do you think an ex-con like me would be welcome at your church?" And for a minister of grace, for any minister of grace, what an opportunity to be able to say, "Yes, yes, sinner, you're welcome."
God can set you free, no one else can. And I'll say this, if you never had a friend in your life, or people have turned their back on you and walked away from you, Jesus will never turn his back on you. He's never turned his back on me. And any time I've reached for him, he put his hand down and grabbed me and held me up. And if I could go back in time, I would change and stay following Jesus from the beginning. But I'm learning to do it now because looking back, he's never turned his back on me. He's always helped me up. It's just how many times I got to go run and fall down by myself. You know, if I just let God be with me, I'll be fine.
So how was that different than what you might have expected? Or was it exactly what you expected to see? What did you think? Did they look like criminals?
No. They looked like the rest of us.
Yes. Yes. That's a common observation. After every time a church comes to worship with the guys, our worship service is at 6:30. On a Saturday evening. It ends at 8, and then we go to a local hamburger place. And one of the first questions I ask the church is, well, what did we learn tonight? And that is inevitably one of the first answers. They're just like us. They look just like us. Now, some of the guys, what they love the most about the churches coming out is that people get to see what actual incarcerated men look like. That they don't immediately, you know, become like gorillas that, you know, walk on their knuckles and have overextended arms. It's not what you see on Prison Break, but that they're real people with real problems.
Do you schedule the congregations to come in like this? One church will come this Sunday and or Saturday and the other.
We do, and at this point in our synod is relatively small. We have about 94 churches, and by the end of 2009, 60 of them will have come to worship with the Living Stones. And right now, there's only one open date left in 2010.
Why?
That's our Christmas service in 2010.
Are you limited to how many people can come?
I can only bring 10 people. And that's in two part. It's a lot of work to do the background checks for people that come in. It also, 10 people is a nice, solid change to the room. I remember once, the one specific group that was coming to worship, some of them had badges that allowed them to escort themselves in. I didn't have to meet them at the gate and bring them in. And they were late. And so I went into worship to, you know, get things started, get the guys ready, and I can tell you the room, for the first time since I'd been there, was dead. And it was just guys, you know, kind of mumbling to each other, boom, boom, boom. I called everybody's attention. I said, look, okay, we're going to start our worship. The visiting church isn't here yet, but they are. And all of a sudden, one of my guitarists goes, there they are right out by the officer's desk. And all of a sudden, the room changed. The feeling, the atmosphere, the expectation. And like they all got up and just started clapping as the people came into worship, you know, standing ovation as they came in. You know, as the people commented, well, gee, I hope our church welcomes us that much when we go there tomorrow. It's another common thing that the guys are so excited to meet people from outside and talk to them. They just go and shake everybody's hand.
Is there social time afterwards?
15 minutes
we try and have 15 minutes of a fellowship of connection time, time to talk. And that can be a very interesting time. That's a good time, especially for guys who might want to schedule a time to meet with me for counseling the following week, something they heard, something they want to talk about. When churches come, besides the background check, I also send each church a list of do's and don'ts for prison ministry. And that's especially important for that last 15 minutes when you're in conversation with guys. And do's and don'ts are very specific. We do not give out our personal information. No man in prison needs to know where a volunteer lives, or what their phone number is, or where their kids might go to school, or what ages their kids are. And also, we do not, one of the hidden rules, we do not ask a guy what his crime is. Because he could be a sex offender. And if we were to ask him and he were to, like, kind of get caught off guard, someone else might notice his awkward silence and start to think, maybe this guy is a sex offender. And that could lead to him being persecuted while in prison. Any other questions or thoughts?
In the time you've been there, have you seen some people get discharged and then you have any follow-up?
The most follow-up we have had has been when guys go to other prisons. So far, we have yet to have someone who was actively involved with the prison congregation who has actually left the prison. Where our prison congregation is located is in a receiving center. I would think every state has a receiving center as part of its Department of Corrections. That's where every convicted felon would go first and would be evaluated, processed for their specific rehabilitation needs, their custody needs. And once that was complete, they would be farmed out to a specific prison that would have the capacities to deal with their needs while they're in prison, and the first available bed. Now, we do have one unit of men at the prison who actually do the work of running the prison. They fix the plumbing. They change the light bulbs. They clean up the gym and put all the basketballs away at the end of the night. The guys to be the janitors and the clerks. They're the guys. So that would be about 240 men. About anywhere from 30 to 50 of those men will associate themselves with the Living Stones at least once a month. A good 20 of them are there every week. The other worshiping population comes from the guys who are transitioning. They're coming to our prison, they're being evaluated, they're sent to another prison. So some men, we may only worship with them for two or three times, if we're lucky. Very similar to campus ministry or even Holden, you know, as guys come passing in and out. And so we see the men of Cedar Hall, the men of the population unit, see their mission as planting seeds in other people, in other incarcerated men, in hopes that, you know, when they leave our prison, they'll still be involved in chapel services at another, that there was an impact. A really exciting story took place in southwest Washington along the Columbia River. There is a town called Kithlamet and a town called Longview. And a pastor was driving from Kithlamet to Longview. Kithlamet is in a county called Wakayakum County, a very small county. And as the pastor's driving to Longview, he sees this guy hitchhiking. And this guy's got, you know, kind of like beige khakis, white t-shirt, industrial-looking boots. Guy had this, like, you know, released con all over him, and he's hitchhiking. So the pastor pulled over. This specific pastor has a brother who's serving life in Alaska, so he's not afraid to be around ex-cons. Pulls over, offers the guy a ride. Where are you headed? Well, ultimately I'm headed up to Pierce County. Oh, what were you doing in Wakayakum? I had some outstanding warrants, but they've been dropped, and I'm being allowed now to, you know, go back to Pierce County and go on with my life. I was an ex-con. I did 13 months at Walla Walla. Oh, said the pastor. Well, it's interesting. My church, this very Saturday, is driving up to Shelton to, and the guy finished his sentence. He said to worship with the living stones. Because that's the best worship service I've been to while in prison. You know, this man had an impact on him. You know, 13 months ago when he had been with us. So that's exciting to see. Now, tomorrow we're going to talk more about reentry, and that's where we're really going to see more of being able to really track guys who go through and go through the come through us. Because we're working with them. We've helped churches form a reentry team to partner with them when they come out of prison. People need to go, need to go. The ideal thing would be typically for if a church came from Federal Way in Southern King County to worship with the guys, if a guy was from Federal Way, he'd go check out Calvary Lutheran or Christ Lutheran when he got out. Sometimes it's hard to make that complete relationship when any such church will only come once every 18 months. So the piece is trying to just, you know, simply continue to plant seeds, expand the reentry piece. The outside board, I have two church councils. I have an inside church council and an outside church council. Our outside church council is to have 20 reentry teams by 2012 throughout the state. So that would be 20 guys who would be getting more intentional partnering as they came out of prison. And really looking forward to that, to that day. Other things we've done, the one young man that was in this video had come to a softball game that we sponsored. Well, a church came to play softball with the guys. And that was exciting because the team that we played in softball, none of the guys came to worship. None of the guys came to the chapel. And I walked, you know, along with the church team, and I also walked over to the other dugout and hung out. And the language was entirely different from the dugout, hearing in the dugout, and the language one hears in the chapel. And it was F this and F that. I started laughing. I go, where's the love? And they started, well, what do you do here? Oh, I'm a pastor. All of a sudden, things got really quiet. But there was another guy who came over to watch the game. He and I started talking, and again, he asked me what I did. And I said, I'm the pastor of the prison congregation here. He said, you don't look like a pastor. You know, and they had this long conversation. And then someone from the church team got injured and was sitting out the game. And so they invited this guy to play with them, to fill in. And he, in turn, a few weeks later, started coming to worship. As did a number of young men from the team coming for the first time. Just because they had experienced something, they had experienced grace, welcome, and fellowship in a non-judgmental setting. Kind of creating that safety for where relationships and where honest dialogue and honest conversation can happen. And that's been a very powerful thing.
Do you have the Eucharist every week?
We do. We celebrate Holy Communion every week. And that, in some cases, it's because some guys, they may go to a place that may only have it once a month, or once every 3 months, or not have it. Different chapel services work, function differently. So we do have it every week for that pragmatic reason. But also, it's that continual reminder that, our forgiveness comes from God. And not from ourselves.
Do you use grape juice?
We do. We do use grape juice. And we always use what's called intinction. We dip the bread into the juice. There's no sharing of a common cup. We also have a liturgical action of the guys who are helping distribute communion. All of them leave right at the prayers that take place before communion. They all leave and go out and wash their hands. And they come back. That's a big thing. It hasn't happened yet at our prison, but several prisons in our state now have swine flu. And so this is a big issue. Guys in prison are always very afraid of germs. You can see them in the cafeteria using napkins to pick up the salt and pepper shakers. I'm just very concerned about what they can pick up and get while they're in prison.
Have you done any baptisms?
Done several baptisms. We have an immersion tank, which is a lot of fun. As Lutherans can finally do immersion. Baptism is a very interesting conversation. Because there's more than just Lutheran theology. Men come with a past theology of, one man wants to be baptized again for the eighth time. Because he keeps falling away from God. And he wants to get it right. And he and I are having this ongoing conversation. I said, we can do an affirmation of your baptism. But if we do it, I mean, the fact that it was done the second time was telling God God was a liar. We need to just affirm what God has done and affirm you in wanting to take those promises that God made to you seriously. I do require baptismal instruction because there is already a lot of theology around baptism in the prison that is both, some of it comes from other traditions and some of it seems to be cooked up altogether just from the guys who are in prison. And when I require instruction, there are some who says, I'm not doing this, I'm just going to go with a chaplain and get baptized. Or I'm just going to wait and wait till somebody else. And others will go through and realize, wow, this is different. This is more than I expected. You know, I thought this was me putting to death the sin in me by being baptized. But this really is God doing it. And I said, yes. It's faith, it's through faith, not through your own actions. Look where your own actions have gotten you. Why don't we put our trust in God now?
How much time do you spend at the prison itself?
I'm there, 25 to 30 hours a week. The rest of my vocational time is with churches on the outside, both in inviting churches to come worship with the guys, doing a workshop with the church, meeting with individuals from churches who are doing specific projects like reentry, or we want to start, hopefully by this fall, probably by the winter more realistically, is to have Stephen ministers come to prison. Stephen ministers are people who are trained in pastoral care. And our hope is to team up and have 10 Stephen ministers come on a Saturday morning and meet with 10 guys to talk about the guy's going through divorce. The guy has lost a family member while he's been in prison. And have them meet for 6 months in a row on the first Saturday of the month. And then get 10 more people on the second Saturday and 10 more on the third and so on. To be able to provide some really quality one-to-one pastoral care. And that's going to require some more conversation with pastors and also Stephen ministry leaders. You have a time check.
Two after.
Okay, we got 13 minutes.
Do you do the background check or do you have somebody?
I do not. That's in partnership with the Department of Corrections.
Okay.
Also, I've gone through a lot of training to be part of it.
Okay.
Because of all the contact I would have with the men, mm-hmm. I was required to do the first semester of correctional officer training.
Okay.
And that, I would say, at least in the state of Washington, our men, our officers have received a great deal of training and skills in de-escalating conflicts. And also our superintendent, on a side note, every time an officer de-escalates what could have been a fight, the superintendent makes sure to write an email to everyone, to all staff, citing, the exemplary work of this officer, who when it could have been, and it could have been any number of bad scenarios, by taking the time to talk to the individual, ask the individual questions, was able to bring the conflict level down. That training included everything from the history of prisons to even how to put on restraints and do a cell search. I, of course, have never had to do any of that, but I was side by side with officers who were learning to do it. And they're another another whole population and community in need of ministry in the prison setting.
How do the deputies, the officials that escort the prisoners, are they okay with having church and church in prison?
In the state of Washington, there's some concern when we talk about self-governance among the men.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, we allowed the lifer units at Walla Walla to be run by the lifers. They set the rules. They made the rules. And when a governor actually got a tour without any escort from a correctional officer, only the lifers were with the governor inside the lifer section. When the governor came out, the governor said, this needs to change immediately.
He did.
She did.
She
was our first female governor. It was, she considered it to be a very dangerous situation. And there are myths and there are stories of what happened, but one thing is true. When they ended the self-governance in the life section, and I mean, because they were even deciding what officers could come in and what officers couldn't. This was real self-governance. They went out to the grass yard and they just covered it with cement. They did not bother to take a metal detector and dig out all of the shanks, all of the weapons. They just concreted the whole thing over. Because it was that damaging and endangering. So because of that time in our state's history in the Department of Corrections, try and be very careful about what self-governance means. I always kind of explain, well, you know, the guys get to plan worship. They get to participate in worship. And they do a lot of things in worship. They do the readings. They lead the prayers. They lead the music. They help distribute communion. We allow a testimony when it's pre-heard and when we trust the person giving it. We also, because we have such a transitoriness of guys who are in worship, we have someone who basically calls people up to lead. John's going to come up and do the reading. And then John comes up, cites the reading for the day. Everyone carries their Bible. So everyone pages through to find it. And that takes some time. And every once in a while, we may have a reader who is willing to read, is excited to read, and can't read very well. And so as he reads, we coach him along.
It sounded like he was reading out of a Spanish Bible at one point.
When we can, when it's a short reading, we try and do it in Spanish and English.
Okay.
And then I always do the words of institution in Spanish and English as well.
Okay.
So that there's something for the men who would have Spanish as their first language and simply not be functional in English.
Was there any problems with the Department of Corrections and the fact that this was one denomination in terms of not allowing all religions?
There was a lot of concern about that. And in truth, we do not make people, we don't do a Luther test on people when they come to worship. You know, anyone who wants to worship Christ, who wants to worship God, is welcome to the worship service and participates with integrity as they know how. With their own integrity. When I first interviewed, I actually got to interview with 8 of the guys. And they asked, are Pentecostals going to be allowed to come? Are non-denominationals going to be allowed to come? Or are you just doing this for Lutherans? And I said, this is a Christian worship service. This will be a Christian church. I am a Lutheran. I'm going to preach from a Lutheran perspective. The sacraments are going to be from a Lutheran perspective. But everyone is welcome here. As far as the, would it be a, you know, would they want, you know, separation, one of the interesting things is, as my position is, I am considered a volunteer, but I'm also considered contract. Now, the state does not pay a cent for me, and I am not under any, they cannot tell me what to do. By the same token, there's things I don't have access to either, but I'm able to come and go into the prison as I have need without escort. And the argument is, if the Methodists wanted to start one, they could. If the Pentecostals wanted to start one, they'd be welcome to. But they would have to fund it or provide the person. And it would be under the same.
So your salary is from ELCA?
My salary is from the Southwestern Washington Synod.
Okay.
From the church's giving to the congregation.
Okay.
Do you do one-on-ones?
Many. Some of that comes through baptismal instruction. Some of that comes through interviewing people for re-entry. Some guys just need to talk.
Right, kites?
Yes. When I did a tour of prison congregations, that is, after I had been through correctional officer training, the first unit of it, I then flew out to Nebraska, where Ed Nesselhoff, the director of prison congregations, picked me up, and we drove to Western Iowa to Church of the Damascus Road, prison congregation at Fort Dodge. We drove to Sioux Falls and worshiped at St. Dismas at the State Pen in South Dakota. The pastor from Prisoners of Hope in Appleton, Minnesota joined us for conversation. And then we drove down to the prison congregation in Nebraska in Lincoln at the State Pen. And got to interview, and I got to talk to guys, I got to talk to the pastors, and one of the men at the State Pen in Lincoln, in Nebraska, said to me, "Make every guy who wants to talk to you ride a kite. Then you know he's actually serious."
Tell us what a kite is.
Ah, thank you. A kite was a name, basically every prison has request sheets. I'd like to see the dentist. I'd like to get books from the library. I'd like to apply to be, apply for this job. I'd like to have a meeting with Pastor Eric. Now these are simply request forms, but they got the name kites, as in and the kites come from early on, when men would be in their cells, and the doors would be shut and locked, there'd still be some room, some right underneath, between the bottom of the door and the floor, and underneath enough space to put a piece of paper, a note, on a string, and shoot it out underneath the door, and try and direct it towards somebody else's door. And then someone else would shoot another piece of paper out to try and hook it and bring it in. Now, sometimes that was called fishing. Sometimes it's called sending kites. And the name for sending kites came eventually to mean, I sent a kite to that person. Well, he sent a real request form to see somebody, but they called it a kite. Okay. And it's such a slang word, it's actually become almost a policy word. It's almost a Department of Correction. I mean, everybody, officers, superintendents, everybody uses the word kite. But it came from prison slang, from the way they would send messages to each other across the aisle, across the floor, on the tier, and the unit.
Okay.
So is there a plan to start another congregation in Washington?
Specifically in Washington, I don't know if it's too soon to say.
Okay.
There is interest in a few other places. As of our past Senate Assembly, there was someone who works for one of our correctional camps approached me, and he and I are in dialogue. Now, in that situation, if it were to be a possibility, it would have to be an ecumenical situation, something that we would go in with United Methodists, Episcopalians, and other groups to really make it a go, given its location. But definitely there is talk of that. And that's one of the things we always hoped, that if there would be 5 or 10 guys from Living Stones all find themselves on McNeil Island, which is another prison in our state, then they could request a prison congregation ministry, and we'd have a mission plan in that prison. There's more than just the Lutherans doing prison congregations. There's about 15 prison congregations nationwide. The Baptist General Assemblies have them, American Baptist Assembly, United Methodist, Christian Reformed Churches have one in Michigan, and Disciples of Christ have one in Kentucky. So the goal for prison congregations is to have one of these in every state.
Well, and I just wanted to comment. You mentioned McNeil Island. I've been involved at McNeil Island for about 5 years now. And one of the things I've observed is that the chaplain has become so, because he's a state employee,
correct,
has become so restrictive on what he can and can't say, and he's got so many regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's so busy with paperwork,
right,
that he really has no opportunity or very little limited opportunity to minister to the guys. And so you need people coming from the outside. The church is funding
mm-hmm.
pastors like you to do
right.
that.
Right, and that's kind of the model. I mean, as we said, the churches, if this is the prison congregation, this is the synod, or the diocese, or the judicatory. Providing, volunteers, providing services. And our state chaplains are there for every religion. They're not just there to see that the Christians have Bibles, but to see that the Muslims have Qurans, to see that the Native Americans are able to sweat, have their sweat lodge. And the various other, that Jewish people get their kosher meals, and so forth. So, Well, thank you. This was a, tonight's program was more for you to be able to ask questions. Tomorrow we're going to do more specifically on reentry and have a little more Bible study and a little more reflection on what the needs are. And then we're going to turn it again to a very specific ministry that's taking place, that's piggybacking off of the Living Stones called Project Cope. Thank you.